A God of encounter. Throughout the Bible we see it, whether it's in a garden or through a burning bush or spoken in a still small voice in a cave. God has always been about encountering his people, and so whenever Jesus appears on the earth, he continues that pattern of encounter. One of the things that I love the most about Jesus is, had he only come and revealed himself to us through conversations with kings and prophets and priests, then we would miss this whole other side of God. God comes and he steps into this world, and he steps alongside our brokenness. And he steps alongside everyday, ordinary people. And through that, we get to see so much more of God's character and of God's love. And that's what we have this morning in the passage that we've heard in John 9. If you have your Bible, keep it open this morning as we walk through this passage. If we could just pop the little PowerPoint on the screen down here, oh, that would be brilliant. Thank you so much. So this morning we're thinking about this incredible story of Jesus healing a blind man. One of probably the most obvious truths of the world is this: beautiful things make beautiful things, right? If you are a carpenter and you get this incredible piece of wood and you put this beautiful piece of wood along your incredible skill set, you can make these phenomenal things. I remember whenever I was about 12 or 13, my family have always had this kind of missionary link to Japan, and Dad wanted to take us out to see Japan, to see where he had grown up, and so we headed out there one summer, and one of the places that I remember distinctly being taken was this gold leaf factory, right, where they basically hammer out gold into these fine little sheets, and then they would take these little decorative objects or bits of furniture, and they would plate that with the gold. They would literally just brush this gold leaf on, and it made the most incredible things. Now, I'm not the best person to do art and craft, okay? These hands are not made for doing art and craft. They're made for using hammers to break things. So they are, but not that sort of fine, delicate work. And so even at 12, 13, I could appreciate the skill of what I was seeing. But the most amazing thing that morning was this. As we were leaving, as most parents of kids do, they said the famous words, "If you need to go to the toilet, go now." And so my sister headed off into the toilet, and she came out a couple of minutes later, and she just went, "Wow, you've got to see this." And we were like, "All right." And so we went in, we opened the door, and everything from the bottom of the room to the top of the room had been covered in this gold leaf. It was the most incredible bathroom that you have ever seen. Beautiful things make beautiful things. And yet here in this passage, what we find this morning is that Jesus steps in and he takes out that we see as perhaps being broken or discarded or unusable, and he uses that to show us God's power and God's glory. He takes that to do something beautiful with it. At the very, very start of our passage in John 9, I love that John reminds us that as Jesus is traveling through, that he sees this blind man. This man that, with the culture of the day, would probably have become invisible to many people. We'll see in a few moments the worldview that was in place at this time, but for many people, they perhaps just got into a pattern of overlooking him, and yet it's Jesus who sees him. It's Jesus who wants to have an encounter with this man. And the important thing to remember is this: he was blind, but he wasn't deaf. So he could hear everything that was happening. He probably heard the commotion of the crowd as people were bustling around Jesus as he was coming down the road. And, you know, he probably heard a lot of things about Jesus. People were trying to figure out exactly who this person was. Some said he was the Son of God. Some said he was a prophet. And regardless of what his worldview of Jesus was at that particular time, he did know that Jesus was known for having some peculiar skills, that lepers were made clean, that the paralyzed could walk, and this particular one, that he could make the blind see. And so you have to wonder in this moment, as Jesus was approaching, that this blind man must have been so full of hope that perhaps one of Jesus' disciples would spot this man, and out of a compelling act of compassion and empathy, they would say to Jesus, "Jesus, why don't you show us your power again? And so his expectation must have been so high. And yet as he listens, as he hears the crowd approach, and as he hears the voices of the disciples, what they say is completely different. John 9 and verse 2, his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind?" And so we find this moment that could have been such an incredible demonstration of God's power and grace, and yet the disciples completely miss the point. What a complete lack of empathy and compassion. As they stand before this man, and rather than seeing the possibility and the potential in the moment, they use this as an opportunity to have a philosophical and a theological conversation with Jesus. All the while, this man hearing the conversation unfold in front of him. And the disciples reveal something of their worldview and the prevailing worldview of the time, and that was this: if you were someone who had a physical impairment or an ailment, if you had been born blind, that it was clearly a sign that God's judgment was on you for whatever reason. What a horrible view of the world. And yet, whenever they speak, they reveal that they only really have two options that they present to Jesus. Is it his sin or is it his parents' sin? Who caused this man to be born blind? Why is he like this? And yet Jesus, as he often does, takes the unmentioned third option, and he says neither. He says it's not that. This happens so that God's works might be displayed through him. They do mention the word sin whenever they discuss this, and it's a word that is not popular outside of the scriptures. It's a word that feels uncomfortable to us. And so often as we watch the news unfold and as we try and figure out the world that we live in, a lot of people do that by trying to do that without the scriptures as their focus. And yet what we find in the scriptures is that it uses this word sin to diagnose our condition. That when we live a life separated from God, we become the people that God doesn't want us to be. But whenever we use this word sin, it's not used as a condemnation. It's used as a diagnosis of our condition. And yet the disciples here, they almost see it as a condemnation, and yet Jesus says, no, this is the problem, but I can be the solution. And so Jesus steps in. The disciples' worldview is completely challenged, and yet what we realize from this encounter is that God is most evident in transforming our brokenness, in taking our faults and our failings and showing up and showing his power of transformation. I don't know if you've ever found yourself in one of those moments where you feel completely out of your depth. They're not nice moments to be in. If we're honest, we sometimes hide from them. One of those moments for me was over Easter. I'd been out of work for an organization, Stand By Me. We look after kids around the world. And one of the countries that we work in is Ethiopia. And we traveled out and we spent a little bit of time in some of these houses. One of these houses is about 2.5 meters wide by about 2 meters forward. And to be honest, the use of the term house is almost a massive, massive overstatement. They're places where people live. And one day we went to visit one of the kids who lives in this house. His name is Muhammad. This is him here. We went to visit him because our staff had told us just about the situation that he had found himself in. Muhammad and his sister, unfortunately, their mum passed away just a couple of years after they were born. And just before our team arrived out, about 2 or 3 months before, Muhammad's dad had been traveling to go and find work somewhere, and he'd been involved in an accident. And they rushed him to Addis Ababa, and unfortunately they couldn't do anything to save him. And so we heard about Muhammad and his sister Farah, and we wanted to go and just see them. And I remember that feeling as we traveled up to their house of going, God, I feel like I am as weak as I can possibly be in this. And I remember praying, I said, God, would you show us some way that we can show your love and your compassion in this moment? And so we stepped into this tiny little mud hut, and we had a little chat with Muhammad and Farah, and we were looking at the room that they called home, and there was this one little bed in it. And I asked him, I said, well, who sleeps here? And Muhammad said, well, my aunt, after my dad passed away, came down from the country, and she lives here with us now. So my aunt and my sister, they sleep here, but there's no space there for me. And I said, well, where do you sleep? And we looked down on the floor and he kicked this bag that had been packed full of grass and he said, that's my bed. And I did one thing that we tell our teams never to do when you're out on mission. Don't make a promise in case you can't keep it. And I remember looking at Muhammad and I said, well, you know what? We want to show you God's love. So I promise you, by the time that we leave, you'll have a bed. I didn't know how we were going to do it. It was Wednesday afternoon. We were leaving on Saturday morning. So I spoke to our caretaker. We went and we got the wood and we got a mattress and we got some blankets and all those things. And on Thursday, we started to put it together. But one of the things I love about Muhammad is this. He spoke to us just as we were leaving and he said, see if you're going to make my bed. Can I help? I thought, how brilliant is that? And so the next morning he came down and he worked alongside us and we built this bed. And then on Friday, after it had all been painted and dried, we took it up and we took it to his house and we put it in. We wished him well. We prayed with him. We had an amazing opportunity to talk about God's love with him. And then we headed off. We were leaving early on Saturday morning. I thought, I'll see him the next time that we're out and see how he's getting on. Saturday morning, we're throwing bags onto the top of the minibus. We're getting ready to leave. And who comes walking down into the school? It's a 45-minute walk to get to school, and Muhammad appears down. You know those moments when you know you're going to get a bear hug and there's nothing you can do to stop it? Muhammad came down from about 20 meters away. The arms just came out and he threw his arms around me, and I said to him, I said, how did you sleep? And he said, it was the first good night's sleep in 3 months. I remember thinking to myself, God, you show up in our weakness. You show up in our brokenness, and it's in those moments that you show us your power. That simple moment of being able to speak God's truth and show God's love in action. And so I continue to pray every single day for this little guy, Muhammad. And so in this moment, Jesus shows up and he speaks God's truth, and then he shows us an action that, to be honest, is a little bit of an unlikely action from Jesus. Had this been a story about one of the disciples healing somebody, and the story had have taken this turn, you'd have probably stopped and wondered if it was the right thing to do. Verse 6, it says this, when he said this, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle and applied the clay to his eyes. Now, that's the sort of thing, if it's not Jesus, you would think to yourself for a moment, that doesn't seem like a very Jesus thing to do. That doesn't seem to fit with the compassion and empathy. And had it been the disciples, you'd have gone, whoa, hang on, guys, I think you've missed something here. And yet, this is Jesus. He takes the two most basic elements that he has to hand, and he says, I can use this to show God's power. And so he takes this mud and this clay and he rubs it on the blind man's eyes. And then he simply says this, go and wash at the pool of Siloam. No promise of healing, not even anyone to help him along his way. He simply says, go and do this. And so the man sets off, and I have to wonder what that experience must have been like for the man who'd blended in, who'd become probably invisible in the culture, but yet all of a sudden was having to make his way from where he was to the pool of Siloam. How do you get to the pool of Siloam if you're blind? And so I imagine him as he was maybe walking along or clawing his way along walls, asking directions. Those moments where he must have felt almost borderline humiliated, and yet he moved because Jesus told him that's where he needed to go. And when Jesus gives that instruction, all that he looks for is our faithful obedience. And so he steps out and he walks to the pool of Siloam, and then he takes the water and he washes his eyes. What must this moment have been like? As the mud came away, and as this guy glimpsed light for the first time, as he gained his sight for the first time, as he started to see the world for exactly what it is. That must have been an incredible, incredible moment. And then what I love is what happens next. This guy starts walking back towards the middle of the town, and people start asking questions. They say, aren't you the guy that was blind? He says, yeah. They say, no, it can't be you, because the guy that we know, you look like him, but the guy that we know was definitely blind and you're not blind anymore. And he says, no, it's definitely me. And some people go, yeah, it is him. And other people are just completely dumbfounded that this guy has received his sight. Such an unrecognizable transformation in this man's life. I love that. I love that when Jesus shows up, When Jesus transforms this man's life, the change is unrecognizable. And for us, as we seek to live out our lives for Jesus, the change should be unrecognizable. That as people encounter us, they should go, "Aren't you the guy who used to work here? But you're different. You've changed. That guy was impatient. That guy was grumpy. That guy was angry. But you're different. Why are you different? I've encountered Jesus." I love the question that they ask him. "Well, if Jesus has saved you, then or cleansed your eyes and given you sight, then where is he?" And the response is simply, "I don't know, because he left while I was still blind." And yet he has this story to tell of God's power at work in his life. And there's one thing that John doesn't want us to miss. Because we're not immersed in the culture of the time, he gives us a translation of just one word to make sure that we don't miss it. The pool of Siloam, the place of being sent. And so for us as the church, I wonder if the message that comes through from the passage, certainly for me, hopefully for you this morning, is this, is that God simply wants us to listen to his voice, to move in obedience. And as we move to that place of realizing that each and every single one of us are sent, then we receive the sight to see the world exactly as God intends it, exactly as we step out as bearers of that message of love and hope and forgiveness and take it to the world, that in our weakness, that in our brokenness, that we too can be that material that in Jesus' hand can be used to do something incredible. Let's pray.